when we discussed this matters in detail, I think we all remember that meeting. The qualification of the department has got everything to do with the matters and nothing else. Maybe we need to be the that. But also, Chair, when we were going up and down with the Auditor General, remember we even submitted late the annual report. With the Auditor General, including the Auditor General himself, we were told by the AG that they'll take this qualification, but yours is because of the issues around the court. And you should remember that story. And I said to the then Minister, I have a big problem. Because when they go out and say you are unqualified, they don't give a reason. So whether it is things that you could control or things beyond your control, they just say, and today this is very clear, duty has regressed from unqualified to qualified. No reason provided. And out there it will still be like that. So it is the inertis, but it's also the inertis related to the matters that were before court, which were beyond our control. That is the issue around the qualification of the department. So maybe they should have just went a step further to clarify that. And probably I'm sure there would be reasons around RAF. I think Little has summed it up. We have agreed over the years. We have been going back and forth with the AG around the smartness of the targets and so on. Well, then we agreed that the AG will look at our APP before we submit, the draft APP before we submit, so that they then advise us in terms of the, and this is exactly what this is all about. They are not the observations from the AG. And you can see, in fact, I think they should have just said, in all the areas we have addressed the issues either by clarification of what we meant by a particular target or by modifying our targets and or technical indicators to be in line and in sync with the AG. So all of those matters are resolved, all of them. There were the last two, I think, in the last just when the interim management report was submitted, which was then also submitted. But I was requested, two issues that are left. Removal of targets from the APP. There will be a various reasons. That, and then on page 122 of our strat plan, revised strat plan, you will have all the reasons why a particular target was removed, or where the others were added. And there are a number of things. There are policy changes within government. There are issues related to if the target is achieved, we take it out. We can't have it, can't continue to have it. And there are certain issues where we have said implementation of the Act, and the Act itself is still not yet approved. So you can't pursue that target because you will not achieve it. We are still waiting for the approval of the, and I think Madidi Malo tried to explain that. But for all the targets, there's no target that we pushed under the table or we brought in new ones because they are easy to achieve. There are reasons why they have been excluded and or added. And that's why you have a revised strat plan now as we speak. So they are there on page 122 to 126. Then for all programs, not necessarily the ones that were sampled or picked up by the AG based on the reasons she has, Madidimal has just given. I just needed those, and when we do the strat plan APP later on, we will go into details on why a particular target was removed and why the other one was added. The last part, Chair, I need to also then talk to this issue of consultation. The issue with consultations is that we can list them, but how do you invite stakeholders? How do you then get them into a meeting? We invite them. Public participation, we even gazette, we even publicize, we advertise. Others, we send invitations. The discussion we had with the AG, the team, was that that is not a guarantee that they will all come 100%. You can invite National Treasury, DPE, and all the others. Now, the question is, if one of them decides to snub you or not come, what then does it say? Because we said the crux of the issue is to show that we have invited them. And then we also supplement that or complement that with the attendance register. So, yes, we can identify them, but according to AG, partially achieved or half achieved is not achieved. Now, once you start to list 1,000 and you do 999 and one does not come for various reasons, they say you have not achieved. And that is the challenge that we are saying we, at some stage, we find ourselves in. But we know who our stakeholders are. And well, to an extent, we even go to them, those that matter. But
some of these questions will come to them. They will respond when we ask them. That's what I want to do.
Chair, I was responding to the AG's presentation. And I think also the AG referred some of the questions to the department on their presentation. So I was simply trying to deal with that part. But I don't have a problem. We can stop. For example, where we have said some of the issues become clearer when we present. But we were dealing with their issues and this presentation in particular and why things, other things are the way they are. But the bottom line is that all those areas, it would have been better if they had even provided you with the spreadsheet of our responses on those things, because all of those errors have been addressed. All of them, 100%. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think honorable members, that's just exactly what I thought the department was responding, because there were other matters which were referred from the AG's office to the department, and we will still go into these very issues in detail for the department makes a presentation. Are there matters that you want to talk to based on what honorable members have said and also what the department has said?
Chairperson, I think there's only two last issues that I think maybe before we close we can just quickly talk to. I think when you look at the process of gazetting and consultations, I think we must say that as the Auditor General, we understand the process. And I think where we're coming from is that, just as a start, your key stakeholders or your key consultations should be identified. So that eventually when you do go through the gazetting process or whatever public consultation process you're going to go through, that when you receive the response, you can gauge the response against what you've identified yourself as your key stakeholders. And I think that is the clarification that we just needed to provide on that one. I think the other one that was raised was, yes, indeed, I just want to concur with the department that when it came to the qualification around DOT, that was specifically talking to the innovative matter.
Thank you very much. Hi, Maya Samaya. Are there still other matters for the AG? Or can we engage with the department? Let me heartily welcome Honorable Kadere to the meeting and say your arrival. We're looking forward to hearing your voice in this meeting. DG, acting DG. I think probably it will be your turn. Are there other issues that you still want to deal with from the AG's office?
You remember that we shared with you the
two documents. Yes.
The other one was the assessment of, well, rather the criteria that will be used to assess the portfolio committee when we do the general report for the implementing outcome. Right on, sister. We're going to be giving you like a 10-15 minute presentation.
Okay.
And then we just want to make sure that by midday at least we have started with the AG, and then we go into the department, because we're supposed to be taking the department at 5:30. And I thought that looks like we are on target and on time, but go ahead, ma'am.
Chairperson, I think what I will do is I will try and go through the presentation quite quickly and not in as much detail as we would like to. I think just to start off with, when we do the general report, we normally put in our general report an assessment of what the different levels of management, executive authority, portfolio committees. What level of assurance have they provided specifically to the audit process? We look specifically at areas of the financial statement. We look at areas of compliance, and we then look at areas of performance information. This comes from the premise of the combined assurance model, which requires us to look at all the different assurance providers that provide assurance. So it would include internal audit, it would include audit committees, it would include portfolio committees, executive authority, management themselves. And in this instance, we thought we needed to share the criteria that will be used for the portfolio committee. And I'm going to go straight into the presentation in terms of the criteria. I'm just going to keep a couple of slides so that we go into... like I said, we look at the combined assurance level model. In terms of this model, we look at firstly management assurance, which is the first line of defense. In this line of defense, we look at senior management, accounting officers, accounting authority, the executive authority. If we look at the actual role that they play, you would see that senior management take immediate steps to address specific recommendations and adhere to financial management and internal control systems. Then we look at the accounting officers and authority that hold officials accountable on implementation of internal controls and report on progress quarterly and annually. We look at the executive authority who monitors the progress of performance and enforce accountability and consequence. So that is the first line of defense, and in its very nature, it would be extensive. If we look at the second level of assurance, that now involves coordinating and monitoring institutions. It includes internal audit and includes audit committees. So it would be all those that have the duty of providing oversight over the department. In this role, we look at National Treasury, DPSA, that monitor compliance with laws and regulations and enforce appropriate action. We look at the internal audit, follow up on management actions to address specific recommendations, and conduct own audits that focus on key areas of control of the control environment, and then report quarterly to the audit committee. We then looked at the audit committee who monitor risks and implementation of commitments and corrective actions by management, as well as quarterly reports on the progress of the action plan.
The third level of assurance, which is where the portfolio committee comes in, deals with the role of independent and assurance providers. And the first one there that we've got is the portfolio committee, the review and monitoring of quarterly progress on the implementation of action plans and address deficiencies. We look at the public accounts committee exercise specific oversight on a regular basis or report on any matters which they deem necessary. And obviously, lastly, we then look at the National Assembly, who provide independent oversight on the reliability, accuracy, and credibility of national and provincial government performance reporting. So this is the basis on which the general report will be based in terms of the assessment of the different level of assurance that provide assurance to the financial statements, compliance, and performance information. If we then look specifically at the criteria that we said that we are going to be looking at, the first one is looking at the budget. And what we're looking here is that did the portfolio committee perform the following considerations of the departmental budget vote? The portfolio committee should aim to complete the oversight process on reports. So we look at the budgeting process and the involvement of the portfolio committee in the budgeting process and what insights they've given to the department in this regard. If we go on to the second assessment criteria, we look at performance information and service delivery. In looking at this criteria, we look at whether the committee reviewed the quality of performance information as highlighted by the audit of performance information, which we would have conducted the audit. We look at the committee review the annual performance report of the department against the annual plan and against the strategic plan. And we then evaluate reasons as to why the committee would evaluate management explanations as to why certain service delivery did not attain the targets set in the strategic plan. So those are the things that we will be looking at in terms of what role has the portfolio committee exercise in terms of oversight. We then look at still under performance information and service delivery. We look at did the committee consider any performance audit reports tabled by the Auditor General. You will remember when we were doing the initial presentation, one of the questions was what is our role in looking at the oversight of the department, and we did indicate that we will be doing a performance audit at the department. So this is another area where once that report is tabled, does the committee then take the report and analyze the findings that are included in the report, and what actions do they then take to ensure that areas that need attention have been addressed? And then if you look at the last two criteria there, we look at did the committee review the implementation of the NTT Service Delivery Improvement Program. We also look at whether the committee reviewed the quarterly report of the department and assesses where there is non-performance or where targets have not been achieved, whether that was a problem of inadequate planning by managers, whether it was a staffing issue, and so forth. On the accountability and in terms of ACSA reports, this is another criteria that we then also look at. And in this, we look at, in looking at this area, we look at did the committee review the audit reports of the Auditor General? And in respect of the audit outcomes, did the members may consider exploring the following: what is the outcome apart from overspending? Does the audit identify any other unauthorized expenditure? Are there any other serious matters that have been raised by our office? And does the committee actually probe further the issues that have been raised by us? Where there are entities that have poor audit outcomes, did the portfolio committee then consider the corrective steps that should be taken or being taken to address the poor audit outcomes? And what are the follow-up actions that are being taken in order to ensure that the auditor general findings are then addressed? Still on the auditor general and the account and accountability, did the committee make recommendations in relation to key issues that would like to draw to the attention of the department as it regards to the performance of the preceding year? Did the committee consider the entity's performance in light of any comments or recommendations that the committee may have in its previous oversight report, if there has been any that has been tabled? So those are what we look at under accountability. When it comes to how we then conclude on the level of assurance that has been provided, it's done in three areas, where we look at the level of assurance where the committee did provide assurance. In that, we look at the committee fulfills the majority of the functions in terms of the assessment criteria. Where we then rate the committee as having provided some assurance, then we look at the committee fulfills some of the functions in terms of the assessment criteria, and then where we indicate that the committee provides limited or no assurance, we will then indicate that the committee did not fulfill any of the functions in terms of the assessment criteria. So this is what we wanted to share with the committee in terms of how do we get to this level of assurance that you then see in the general report, and the idea was that we share with the committee the criteria that is being used. Chairperson, that is all from our side.
Thank you very much.
I don't see this in your reference here section 55(2) in the constitution. What I see in section 55(2) of the constitution is the National Assembly must provide for mechanisms to ensure that all executive organs of state in the national sphere of government are accountable to it, not to anybody else, and to maintain oversight of the exercise of national executive authority, including the implementation of legislation and any organ of state. Now, I would like to ask you, madam, where does this combined assurance model come from? Who designed this assurance model, and where is the authority for this assurance model to then state that a portfolio committee is indeed a third level of assurance? Where do you get this model from to define a portfolio committee as being a third level of assurance? I don't see where. Can you then tell me where this comes from? And from there on, we can take the next question. Please just tell me, where do you get this model from, and where do you get the authority from to define the portfolio committee as a third level of assurance? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Musinga, Honorable Tifaitas. Oh, the same question, Honorable Ramatakan.
No, thank you very much. I think the passion in which this matter is presented by the colleague on this side makes my job easier. I just want to check, Chair. I also was battling with the section 55(2). And then I tried to reason with myself that maybe this is the right thing to do by the AG. But my head says no. Let me ask this question. In terms of the mandate, the AG's mandate, besides what the Constitution says, the function of the AG is defined in the Act. It's described in terms of what Goldrick says in Chapter 9. That is made out. But in it, I could not find, even last year when we were having this long discussion, I could not find this particular function in relation to the legislature. Now, I was wondering, anything that we do is somehow defined, we get authority somewhat. The function says of authority from somewhat. This one I couldn't find in the Act. It is not in the Constitution. Now, I don't know exactly whether it is just a make-up shift. The approach that the AG has come up with, say, let's maybe try and do this. Now, the problem here, when you have approached this this way, it is going to be, if the oversight function, the final arbiter of the oversight function of Parliament in terms of Parliament located within the AG. Because this is almost a tantamount to a particular determination with respect to Parliament, because Committee of Parliament is the extension of Parliament. It is in any way a Parliament. So I just want to find out if you can help me to understand it, help me to understand the authority in terms of the Act. Because if it is not specified in the Act, the lawyer would say, well, it's ultra-violent. It's not necessarily, there's no local standing in terms of coming up with it. There is also Italian language. So maybe we can be assisted to understand it. But asking this question does not necessarily suggest that we don't want to hear a view of the AG in respect of what we do as a committee. But the problem, this assurance issue, the third level one, that's where the problem, I don't think that we don't necessarily have an issue that we can or have a constructive criticism about our shortfall here. But once it comes to a determination, because this is the determination now, this is where the buck stops, this is the guillotine in other languages. Now, when it comes to the guillotine, that's where then we start asking the questions. We throw the book. Because you also throw the book when you deal with the word. Which book provides this function that must be functioned? Because I think if I look at it, it's painted red, isn't it? At those columns there. What does it mean, real term? I think I've made my point. I'll take the chair.
Thank you, Jefferson. What I can just say is for the general, yes, delay and the committee.
Thank you, Jefferson. Thanks, Jane. Okay. Jefferson, I still maintain our last year's end that they sometimes they are now jumping over the line. Can I, now that we are on the presentation, we are reminded of our accountability role, can I ask a question based on the presentation? To say, now that there was an issue around the consultation, previously there was an issue around consultation, firstly I was to say that target, that planned target was not smart. But I think in the meeting between the auditor and the auditee, there are some explanations there that are given. And I think for them to make a final determination, it is based on the deliberations, where I think in that meeting there must be consensus reached. How as they, as Auditor General, begin to qualify the department around a matter that was explained? That is just my question. Around a matter that is explained, if the matter is beyond their control, like the issue of the inertis that was explained, and the issue of stakeholders, if it is explained, how do they then begin to get a qualification? That is just my answer, Chair. But I still maintain, don't jump the line. Thank you.
Really, my first time, I've been telling you, given comments, I never hear that the Auditor General will audit members of staff. My first time here. So I don't know, are they telling us that now they are going to elect the members of staff?
No comments or comments.
Calm down a little bit now. I've also in the meantime had a conversation with my chair. She's not being consulted at all. So if this in any way is an evidence-based report, there was no opportunity to provide evidence. So can you then also enlighten us on this criteria within the model? Oh, yes, our minister. Chair, if we can then also just get insight on the criteria, evaluation criteria of this model, and to what extent the objectivity of this evaluation then is handled.
Thank you very much. Before I give to the AG's office, let me heartily welcome from our very own, from amongst us, Honorable Maswanganyi, the Minister of Transport in the Republic of South Africa. We take pride, Honorable, to receive you. One person once said to the other people that I was this side, now I am that side. But we're looking forward to really working very, very close with you, to you. Earlier on, I said when the AG was presenting that their presentation made us to feel kind of at ease with how the department has really taken up matters, that the AG is not seeing a lot of pierced holes as they were making a presentation. We hope that the little holes that are remaining, you will be able to make stops in those holes, and then you are able to move forward and take the Republic of South Africa forward, because I think you are one of those big departments which actually deals with matters of infrastructure, deals with the safety of the people of the Republic, and many other things that we can be able to talk to. AG, I think it's going to be the response from you to us with love. He has already cooled down, don't worry. But this is the food for thought that we are giving you to go and give to the Auditor General Somsang. Probably as the Portfolio Committee would really want to meet with the AG in person and tease out some of these things. We would really want to have an understanding, because as legislators, we take our cue and our mandate from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa as to what are the things that we can and can't do. And there's the legislation that compels you or guides you how to conduct your functions as the Office of the Auditor General. And therefore, we are of the belief that whenever there are other things that we should be able to relate to yourself on, we should have an agreeable and an amenable approach that we are working together with. That is why last year we said there is no how the AG can come and do oversight over the Portfolio Committee. And I think you have had the sentiments which is shared by my colleagues here. They still maintain that how do you do that? Where did you get your mandate from that you would be able to come in to do oversight over the Portfolio Committee? Or maybe we may want to go and look at the assessment criteria and be able to work it. You know, it's semantics. It's English as hard one, I guess. Maybe we can get a stronger. So, look, when you put it in Shanghai, it will be very easy for it to can be able to be understood by us, especially the question here, assurance assessment criteria. I'm just letting with my thinking to put all these three words in Shanghai to say what exactly does it mean. And you'll find that it's something that is very easy and amenable for us to can be able to understand. But we know that the Queen's language or the Madam's language is not our language. Probably in our indigenous language it was going to mean something else. You see, in Shangan, if you say, I told you in English, and I put it in Shangan, it's got such a deep meaning, Nabubjela. You hear it? It's got such a deep meaning. It's not like when you put it in English, I told you. It's very mild. So these are the things that we're trying to say. Let's look into them and see how do we deal with them. But for sure, some of the things you may not necessarily be able to talk to. On behalf of the portfolio committee, we're saying that probably we may need to have a 30 minutes with the AG so that we are able to really tease out this document so that when we do agree to follow this that is in this document, we already have had a clear vision because we are one alone, Fanalo, we are Delela. Way back I am at Faya Delela, whereas Wuya Delela. So I don't want to really say how you can really feel the sentiments that members are sharing. So probably when we do meet with the AG, they would have really softened up, and we're going to read this document over and over to really internalize and have an understanding of the meaning of the assurance assessment criteria and have an understanding as we're moving forward. By the way, we are taking South Africa forward, so there is no doubt that when the paradigm shifts, if you remain behind, you will fall by the wayside. That's my thinking and my understanding of how we should be able to look at the paradigm as it shifts from time to time. And you must always remember, even culture is not static, policies are not static. So therefore, as legislators, what are the things that you can put in place to assist you to be able to do this in totality, having maybe gone and looked into the laws that governs all of us to say how do we put it in a proper perspective to yourself.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good day to the Honourable Minister. I thank you first for the protection from that Honourable Member.
You're protected.
I'm protected, thank you very much. And I think if I were to put it in Shangan, I wouldn't be able to. I speak Venda, so the only other way that I could possibly, yeah, I would only put it in Venda. I think I appreciate the sentiments, Chairperson, that you've shared with us and the questions that have been raised by the members. I think we're totally in agreement in terms of the process up until a point where we agree. The questions need to be raised so that there is clarity in terms of where we're coming from and also where the portfolio committee is coming from, so there's common ground in that. A question was raised on where we need to just clarify the evaluation criteria that we are using. And I think the first thing that we need to clarify is that we as the Auditor General are not playing an oversight role over the portfolio committee. That is not what we're doing. We audit in terms of the standards, the accounting standards, in terms of the PFMA. And as part of that, we look only at financial statements, we look at compliance, and then we look at performance information. And you will have seen when we shared the different criteria that our focus in terms of where we want to assess the level of assurance provided by the portfolio committee, that it could only be around those areas. We are not looking at any of the other functions of the portfolio committee. We are not going to come and audit the portfolio committee. But all that we're going to do is when we look at financial statements, compliance, and performance information, we are going to look at what was the involvement of the portfolio committee in that process, what were the levels of assurance that the committees have done? And in that sense, I think similar to all other assurance providers, whether assurance was provided. So I think just to clarify, as the members were raising the questions, I almost thought that there was a feeling that we are coming to audit the portfolio committee and that we are coming to see whether the portfolio committee is coming to work and doing what they're supposed to do. Our focus is limited only on the aspects of the financial statement, compliance, performance information on which we express our audit opinion. So it will not be on any other functions of the portfolio committee. So I hope I have clarified that one. There was also a question that was raised around consultation between us and the department, where I think there was an example made where there was a qualification matter. Where we've got disagreements with both management, we consult with management. We have regular meetings with them. We have what we call audit steering. We engage with them in audit committees. We engage with them in expo. And issues get discussed there. They will put their case. We will put our case. We must say that there is areas where we do agree, and there are certain areas where we agree to disagree. And in those instances, we have gone to the Office of the Accountant General as the final arbiter in those processes where we had disagreements. So that is the process that we follow in case where there is conflict or where there is disagreement. Chairperson, I think I have responded to the questions that have been raised.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ramachandra.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for some of the responses, AG. Just maybe clarify me on this issue about financial statement. That it's got to do with financial statements, only in relation to that. Now, maybe I've missed this in the Q&A. In respect to the responsibility of the portfolio committee in relation to financial statements. My reading of the PMFA, certainly I did not get that impression in terms of what the role that we play as a committee, because the financial statement is clearly defined in the PMFA as a document that is an executive document that goes from that shows the expenditure that goes to the executive or to EAs. Now, if you can just maybe help us to understand what in terms of this model, what is it that you expect from us as a committee so far as the financial statement is concerned? So that's a document that might be issued in terms of the treasury getting involved. And then let me see it maybe those who have PMFA here could help me to understand that particular provision, that section in the PMFA, so that at least we know we are getting educated around it. But from where I'm sitting, I haven't looked at the PMFA. I did not find that we can be found to be wanting to an extent that we are unable to provide assurance sufficient as a result of the financial statement PMFA guidelines. I thought at the beginning that because I've seen some of the document that you need in terms of determination. At the beginning I thought maybe our secretary of the committee in the report of the oversight document that was submitted for you to look at the sample, what we have been able to do were insufficient. I thought at the beginning that
there may have been a gap in their documentation in terms of evidence base, what the committee has been able to do in terms of it. But now I'm getting that impression that it's not quite that. At some point I thought maybe the minutes were not detailed enough for you to see that what we have been able to, the difficulty we've been able to handle throughout the year. It's not that we meet with the department just to have biscuits and coffee. It's a serious engagement with them. So I thought at the beginning that that was the impression I was getting as I was reading here, but I don't think it's actually that. It's something bigger, and that is PMFA, financial statement area. So maybe if you can help me to understand it, I'll be happy to let go on this one. But for now, I'm still having my misgiving around.
Thank you.
I also still stand to be answered on my core question, and that was whether this model is a creation of the 80. Then I also noticed three different, what I suspect to be criteria areas, oversight, public accounts, and national assembly. Could you enlighten us on those three elements which you have shown on the presentation as a subsection of this so-called third level of assurance? Can you talk to us about that?
Thank you very much. I just want to take you to your document on page 5. The first bullet and the second bullet. They are really clear as to how we should be able to look at the matters, because your first bullet is what the honourable members have been talking to, that the legislatures has got power over oversight of respective executives, and that is what we think we are doing. Probably, maybe, if you want to say that you would want to look at the legislatures, how they do oversight over the financial issues, then it is we will have to go and look into the PFMA as to what are the guiding issues in the PFMA which looks into how the legislatures and the legislators are doing oversight over the executive. And it goes on further to say we should provide mechanisms and ensure that there are mechanisms that as we are doing oversight over the state organs, respectively, we make sure that they become accountable to us. And I think in this manner that we are gathered here today, this is part of the accountability that we are looking at. And that is why the honorable members are just asking questions and to say, if we were going to be dealing with how the proposal is like from the AG, how do we now, what will be the rules of the game in essence? This is what honorable members are saying. And that is why I have said earlier on that probably for us to understand the rules of the game as proposed by the AG, we would really want to, we don't want to engage the two of you, the playing field is not level. In essence, I take it that the playing field is not level because you've got the big guns and the shotguns. So we want both shot, if it's going to be shotguns, we will send Spoo to deal with the shotguns. But if it's big guns, we want the big guns to meet with the big guns and be able to fire from the same level. Because you see, when you're firing from that end, you will shoot the hip and Sibu will not be injured. Whereas if you get Sibande firing from the same level with the others, you'll be able to meet the target. You see, so basically for me, that is what is at the crux of the matter, to say, let's have the playing field being leveled, and then we can be able to say we're having the understanding, this is how we're going to be dealing with the matter, as we'll be going forward. We're not saying that we don't want to bind ourselves working on issues that have been spoken to here, but we're saying let's have a clear and thorough understanding so that we move and think from the same symbol in essence. Your last petition, or honorable members and officials from the department, I have decided that we have been seated here for quite some time. Once the AG finishes, we'll take a break, go and have lunch for 45 minutes, and then we'll come and take the presentation from the department after lunch. And you know with me, there's no graveyard session here. So after lunch, I think I'm going to sit right there so that whoever wants to slumber and go into slumber land, I will be there to just say these are the issues that we will be dealing with. We definitely will go to ground floor. At the restaurant on the ground floor where lunch will be served when we do finish here. Then we'll go take it. Yeah.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think maybe to start with the question that was raised by the Honourable Member in terms of the link between the two domains. If you look at the assessment criteria that we spoke about earlier when I was doing the presentation, we spoke about, and this is just to break it down, we spoke about areas where there have been findings on the financial statement. And remember when we started, we indicated that as the Auditor General, we audit in terms of the PFMA. So you will find instances where we're saying that there has been non-compliance to the PFMA, and which is an item that now affects the financial statements, and it affects compliance matters and possibly could affect performance information. So when you look at what are the action plans that the department will then put in place to correct and rectify whatever we've identified, or whether it's been identified by another process, say internal audit for instance, what are the processes that are going to be put in place by the committee to then hold the department accountable? So I'm just trying to make the link so that you understand is there will be an audit that will be done in terms of the PFMA. There will be findings that will come out of that audit. The department would need to put in action plans in place to ensure that whatever has been identified is then corrected. On the flip side is to say to the committee, what processes does the committee then put in place to ensure that there is accountability then from the department side. You also raised a question around, the committee also raised a question around the different levels of assurance and where that comes from. The combined assurance model is a best practice model which was developed by King. And what we look at is at the base of where the activities take place, at the base where the internal control environment is actually put in place, that is the responsibility of management. So if anything is to go wrong, the first line of defense would be the control that management put in place. And when we go from first level level assurance, second and third, it's going in that order to say your first level assurance is management, because those are the people that put the controls in place. If the controls in place are not adhered to, then there must be a second level of assurance which says, if those controls are not put in place, who holds management accountable? It starts internal audit would be the first people that would hold management accountable. The audit committee would be the second people that would hold the audit the management accountable, and so forth and so forth up until you get to that third level of assurance. Yeah, And of course, and I think also, Chairperson, the AG also comes in that space as well, because we also are part of that combined assurance model, because when we go in and we audit, if the controls have not been working, we would identify what controls have not been working. And obviously that is done on a sample basis from our side. We won't be able to identify everything at a go. But the different levels of assurance are really saying what lines of defense have been put in place and whether those lines of defenses are actually picking up what they're supposed to be picking up, and is everybody playing their role that they're supposed to be playing in terms of holding each other accountable. And I think that just summarizes where this assessment criteria is coming from. And if you look at each level of assurance, what is their responsibility? And how do we, so internal audit assessment would be very different to how we assess the portfolio committee. The audit committee's assessment would be very different to how we assess the portfolio committee. So it's coming from that space where we say, when controls are put in place, when things go wrong, what level of assurance is there to detect and prevent internal control deficiencies that could result in material misstatements to the financial statements. So I hope I've made the link for the committee, and that clarifies that matter.
Uchi tali chau chia panda ai zibo bilinga. Zino karas kodo zilincha. Hava gani ingatu wa fish pinga. What I'm saying to her is that I saw some two hands there, so I will not give them hands time there. But you know, maybe let's just make an example for members' clarity. Let's take the BRRR, and maybe you talk to, because that impacts and affects us directly as the portfolio committee. So if you can be able to explain to the committee that it has to do with the budgeting processes and the observation that the committee will be able to make to the department. If you can talk to that, and just, I'm just saying, give us an example within the BRRR so that we're able to have clarity of thought and clarity of thinking as we're going forward.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think an example that I would probably be thinking in this scenario is, let's take the matters that we're discussing this morning around the performance information and how the portfolio committee goes about assessing the quality of the performance reporting that is submitted to the committee. One of the key questions that was raised by the portfolio committee was that where there are targets that have been removed or added, where there are targets that have been that have not been achieved in terms of tracking those. That is a key example where the portfolio committee, its role in holding the department accountable, is an area that we would be interested to look in. To say, okay, you were submitted with a performance, with an annual performance plan. Certain targets and indicators were removed. Why were they removed? Are the reasons provided valid? Do they make sense? Is it making sense to take out that specific indicator? So that role is the role that we're looking at to say, okay, if that is happening, then we're given comfort that there is accountability that is taking place, that is taking place where the department is concerned. So that is the link that we're trying to make. If those are the areas that we're going to look at. And I hope, Chair, that In explaining that, we're able to clarify that our role is not to come and say the portfolio committee is not doing its job. Actually, where the portfolio committee is holding the department accountable, the result is seen in when we go in into the audit. Because the process that we go through is we come in at the end of the process And the committee would have been engaging with management or the department on a regular basis. So if there's certain things that have been tasked for the department to do in order to make sure that performance information, for instance, the quality of reporting is adequate. By the time we come in for the audit, that is where we say, okay, we've looked at the questions that have been raised by the portfolio committee, we've looked at the responses that the department has provided, and in looking at that, we are seeing that management, based on the feedback from the portfolio committee, is actually taking action. And then we go in and we say, okay, so the portfolio committee is engaged in the process, and they are providing some assurance to this process.
On the same issue, on that very same issue, you would read the report from the committee. You see an action that we said the department must do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to correct this.
Yeah.
You would read that. And when the department is making their feet in that implementation, now you using the sledgehammer on the committee decides the committee has failed.
When we have in fact done what we're supposed to do in terms of making recommendations to the department to say you must go and fix this and the other. But if they don't do it, we don't have a mechanism as a committee to fire all of them. That's a matter that the executing authority will deal with, because our report goes there. But if you don't get a turnaround, 100% compliance terms of implementation, why should we carry the can? That's the question. Why must we carry the can when there is no provision in Act that we shall now take a next step in firing this official because they're failing everyone, all of us? It's a matter that is now repaired to another level. That's the crux of the question.
Okay. Thank you for that question, because I think
the point of before, if you can give it to Honorable Chibande, so that you are able to answer them before, and I think by 12:30 we should go to the front, body break is needed also.
Chairperson. I think when we were requesting the department to hold on, because we are still coming to the department, they follow up. You see, I was wondering, with these two presentations, the other one, from the Auditor General report, the other one, from slide number 8, I don't know how many pages, 1, 2, 3, I think it's 5 or 6 pages. It means that they are doing oversight over us, as if we are given a budget. We don't hold the budget. And we discussed this matter several times before, that we asked about the criteria, which criteria was used to determine any evaluating on us. I'm deeply concerned. That's why earlier on, Chairperson said, when you ask a question that you were giving us an opportunity to ask questions, I said, I'll come later on. Because I can't understand this. Because we're supposed to be helped. There are. Us who are being evaluated in all terms of political level. But with this one, I can't understand. I don't agree with this. And if it can goes to other people outside, I don't know how it's going to be their interpretation. Because to me, it's the first time to read or to learn about the type of the systems, which the criteria which is used against us. We're not given a budget at all. How can you evaluate on us? And we ask, we remember, I don't know where, but around here in Parliament or outside Parliament, we had a lengthy discussion with the Auditor General's office about ourselves. No, I'm not satisfied. I'm not here to check.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think to respond to the first question that was raised, the idea is not punitive. when you say it's not punitive, it means that where the portfolio committee has done its part and we can be provided with evidence of its oversight, we are comfortable that in terms of the assurance level that was provided, the committee did do its part. Whether the department then did not do what the committee tasked it to do is not a reflection of the portfolio committee. And therefore, it cannot be that we say that the portfolio committee is right in terms of providing no assurance. So I hope I've clarified that one, because I think what we, I think there's a fear that, the thing that I'm getting is that there's a fear that I have done my part, I've done X, Y, Z, but even if when I've done X, Y, Z, I've not seen the outcome. But does that mean that because the outcome is not there, I've not done my part? And that is not what we're saying. What we're saying is if we can be in discussions with the portfolio committee and we can see the evidence of that oversight, we are comfortable that the necessary steps have been taken by the portfolio committee, and the assurance level will say, yes, it's green, they provided assurance. Then you take it to the next level.
No, we're talking now. Thank you very much. You see, don't even look that side, because one Navali, what you come out of me, they keep on shaking this bald head up there. So I'm not even looking at that. Relax, Wena. I think we're talking, but the crux of the matter here is that we're giving you a message. Probably we will follow it up with a letter from the committee secretary to the AG, saying we have interacted with this model, and therefore we request you to come and talk to the portfolio committee so that we're able to understand this matter in a better way for us, so that when it gets, we there is implementation, we are moving from a better trajectory compared to how we're feeling now. Can we close the matter on that and go for lunch? I've said that our lunch will be 45 minutes, and it's now, according to my chronology, 12:30. So we will come back at 1:15 the latest. Thank you very much. Let's take a break for lunch.
Presentation, nigga.
Yeah.
activate the laptop.
Where's the presentation? This one. This one.
Anyway.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. My colleagues from the IFC is here. Then the meeting can start. Honorable members, officials from the department, somebody must come and deal with this call, please. Before I call the department to present, let me once more congratulate on behalf of the portfolio committee, Honorable Masangani, who has been referred from amongst us to the portfolio committee, to the portfolio of the Department of Transport of the Republic of South Africa. I am very excited because he hit the ground running. He saw his programs during the Easter festivities. He have an understanding of what the statistics are all about. So he to come and maybe indicate other methods in front of the portfolio committee. Minister, we take pride in what you have started doing, and we know that you can do more. Even when you are closing your eyes, you will be grinding some of the things. That's what the kettle always does. When it's sleeping in the throat, it is digesting. So in essence, that is what is going to be happening. Without much ado, let me quickly give to the minister, and then we will be able to take it up from there. Honorable Masonga.
Thank you, Chairperson, colleagues, members of the committee, the acting DG and the entire staff of the department. Also apologize, I should have been with you from 9:30. Now I'm on the other side of the arm of government. So I had to go and take my thing from the parliamentary village. The public works has to take over the house and let another member to stay there. So I thought it would be better I start there because it's pretty cannot be far from here. So I would have liked to start with the meeting. But with that as it may change, we are here. Thank you very much for welcoming us. Chairperson, the role of Parliament, nobody can question it. It's oversight role. We all account to Parliament. And it is provided for in terms of Section 55(2) of the Constitution. And also 92 and 183, which states that cabinet ministers and members of provincial executive council must act in accordance with the constitution to provide parliament and the provincial legislature with full and regular reports concerning matters under their control. And it goes on and on and on and on. So we are not coming here, Chairperson, for the sake of compliance. It is because we have to account here. And there are consequences if you don't account to Parliament, not only the department, but all organs of the state have to account here, including organs that are there in the public. So we take very serious the task that we are given by the portfolio committee, so that when we come next time, we must make sure that we respond to the issues that are raised by the portfolio committee. We are also making sure that the turnaround time for written parliamentary questions is much shorter. We don't take too long to respond to questions. This matter has been raised also from the Speaker's office. Last week there was a cabinet meeting and there was a letter written by the speaker to the leader of the government business about our lack or poor response to questions asked by members. So we'll see to it that we respond in time on written questions. Chairperson, I don't have to go into the mandate of the department. I think DG is here with the entire staff. But our mandate is very clear. It's transport service. There are a number of strategies and policies that are under review and those which are new. Some have gone to cabinet. Others are still on their way there. I think the acting DG will talk about that. The issue of Mloto Rail, I realized the report, Mloto Corridor, we have been there last week. The road construction has started. Two contractors are on site. The rail project, our Chinese friends promised that they will be coming the end of this month. Remember, we have a memorandum of understanding. And the people of who stay along that corridor can listen to more and more stories. Hence, we have to go there. But on the rail part, there is real work, Chairperson. If you can go there, you'll see two contractors that have started with intersections and widening some parts of the road. So the rail one, when we meet the Chinese later this month, we'll bring a full and comprehensive report as to what are we going to do. Well, of course, I still have to visit the completed trains where I'm told there are issues. Tomorrow I'm going there to get the scientific report that they are too long, they can't pass certain tunnels and bridges, and they can't fit in certain railway lines. And so I want to go there and see for myself, Chairperson, and listen to the engineers what the story is all about. I don't have a proper story because they have been paid for. The issue of BRTs, there are issues that we have to attend to. I was in Nelspruit yesterday. We have a sort of a white elephant of a terminal where some people have turned it into a car wash. We have spent a lot of money on that terminal. It's a cause for concern. And there are other issues somewhere which we have to attend to. But with that in mind, there are success stories for the BRTs. But this time we'll make sure that before we transfer money to provincial and local government, surely there must be guarantees that the money will be used for the purpose that it was transferred for. Otherwise, we'll keep the money here and use it for something else. That's the power of the BRT system, municipality, you know. We can't give you money and you do as you wish. Because in some municipalities, they leave the rollout to consultants. You find there's no capacity and there's no willingness to transfer skills to the local municipal officials to run the BRTs. We are also making sure that we improve on the intergovernmental relations, Chairperson. Because like last week I met Sandra, that I won't become a firefighter. I know when there are problems, it's then that I must be told, can you meet the MEC? I'll be part of taking decisions on the project, what needs to be done. But if I come later, because there's a fight between Sandra and MEC of Free State on the Harris Mean and N1, Fentersburg, it can't be like that. There is a problem, we have to go to Eastern Cape through you, Chairperson Kumeiseku, on the N2 toll road or the project. It's a serious matter, we have to go there and meet the MEC and the community. And quite a number of areas where we think that if we improve on intergovernmental relations, when we conceptualize projects, And by the time we implement it, if we have a good understanding with provincial and municipal governments or local governments, certain issues will be averted. Probably this week, we might be going to Durban just to visit some of the programs on Operation Pakisa. SAMHSA is making arrangements so that we don't talk theory when we talk about Operation Pakisa. We talk of something that we really understand what is it all about. The issue of rail, in particular passenger rail, is a matter that has been raised time and again. It's about the reliability and safety in the main. During Easter, we were with the RSR in Park Station, and they explained to us technically the problem of signals, the problem of platforms vis-a-vis the height of the coaches. So we're with PRASA and RSR. We'll make sure that those are issues that must be attended, but also reliability, that our trains should arrive in time. Otherwise, at the end, people end up touching them. And we have lost lots of coaches as a result of passengers being impatient with our rail system, which in most cases you find sometimes is not reliable. And when we were there in Park Station, passengers also raised the issue of safety, that sometimes the associates will trouble them in their coaches. So it's a matter that we have to attend to and make sure that our rail are reliable, our trains are reliable and also safe. There is the issue of vacant posts, which I think DG will talk about it in detail, both in the department and in the agencies. We'll see to it that those posts that are budgeted for are actually filled. And the matter that has been raised from time to time is the issue of gender equity at the top level. At lower level, I think we comply, but at top level, we are far behind, even in agencies. There is only one female CEO of all our agencies, almost 12 of them. It can't be business as usual. We have to do something about it. The agencies, there are vacancies in terms of board members and also staff and executives. So we'll make sure that we comply with the legislation in terms of gender equity, people with disabilities, and so on and so on. There are bills, some of them I think today the Deputy Minister who couldn't make it yet will present them in the Cabinet Committee so that they go through Cabinet and come here so that we comply with the requirements in terms of timeline. Otherwise, if we come very late, Parliament won't have time to process them. The DG's case, Chairperson, Leopold, we are going to meet the lawyers and DPSA this afternoon. It's a matter that is hanging. It hasn't been finalized. We'll attend to the matter and we'll report to you on the outcome as to what will be the way forward. In that is, we have just gone there and taken over in Atis. Our friends, Tasima, were not there. So we keep each other busy with love letters. So they write the love letter, we're taking it to court, no, we'll defend. But we are there. We've taken over, RTMC is running the system. And we're not going to leave that place. Because the moment we leave, the place will be vandalized and the system will be in trouble. Thanks very much, Chairperson. As I've said, that we are here not for the sake of compliance, but it's a constitutional requirement that we must come here and we take the decisions of the portfolio committee very, 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 very serious, and there should be consequences if we don't comply with the decisions of this body. Parliament is at the same level with the court, executive, as those are the three organs. And all these three organs take decisions that get implemented. And if they are not implemented, there are consequences. So, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. We're not going to open for questions, but I would request that we give the DG the microphone so that he can be able to take us through. But let me also indicate, honourable members, that the minister has requested that in an hour's time he would like to go, like he's indicated, that there's an impasse between the department and the former DG, Mr. Selepe, that he goes and meet with the DPSA and the relevant people so that they can be able to, around 4 o'clock, so that he can be able to go and meet with those people. My assumption is that probably from the acting DG and the team, they will be able to make it in such a way that by the time the minister leaves, everything has been done. So that he doesn't leave without having heard what are the issues that we are raising, as this is his maiden sitting in the portfolio committee as the Minister of Transport. You looking at me? What? Okay. Thank you very much, honourable member. Let me give the acting DG an opportunity to make a presentation on the APP of the department. Acting DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister, and members of the committee and colleagues. Chair, we will try to move with some speed. Fortunately, the minister has touched on a number of key issues. We then hope that as the official, we will then be in a position to implement. But just to kickstart, the minister has indicated a few memos that are before cabinet. We actually have 15 memos that are going to cabinet. 5 went through today. Feedback we are getting, although they are still busy, is that we are doing well in terms of getting approval. And then the others will follow suit. These are the issues that were a bit hanging in terms of the performance of the 16-17 financial year. Now getting into the business of today, the presentation chair will talk to Chairperson, we sent through a presentation with attachments this week in terms of the issues that we were supposed to send. It is important that we have the copies of these issues because I think the more special on the BRRRR, the supplied information is in the form of hard copies. So we'll deal with the alignment to the NDP, MTSF, and so on a pronouncement. And then we were also requested in terms of the template to deal with the AG findings from the annual report. We then combined those with the action plan to address the findings. And then there are the recommendations of the portfolio committee from the BRRR 2016. And then we are providing feedback in terms of those issues. And then we will talk to the issue we raised earlier around the revised strategic plan 2015 to 2020, given that some of the issues have been achieved, others have been have not been achieved in terms of time, and then we'll talk to those strategies, and particularly the APP. And then we'll deal with the targets around the APP. And then we'll talk to the key challenges which we want to believe that the portfolio committee can assist us. And again, in terms of the template, we had to come with the effect of the budgetary constraints. We do not touch much as a department in terms of revenue generation because we are generating none. But hopefully, in the days to come, the entities will be in a position to expand further on those issues, on the issues around revenue. In terms of the NDP, Chairperson, the DOT, the department, aims to then demonstrate acceleration in terms of how services will be delivered. And then we then dwell much on issues around stakeholder engagement and buy-in, and then talk to the issues around shared growth or inclusive growth, and then reprioritize in terms of what we have to address the very issue of radical economic transformation, and then talk to the issues around capacity and where we are prioritizing, reprioritizing in terms of the skills that are required. Our alignment in terms of the MTSF, Chairperson, includes the improvement of level of integration of the infrastructure systems and operations, both vertically and horizontally, among modes, but also among the spheres, and how we interface with regional and continental transport issues. And then the issue around the incidents and accidents reduction, in particular fatalities on all our modes are also paramount. But improving in terms of the transport infrastructure for the purpose of increasing accessibility and mobility for both rural and urban areas. And then ensuring the reliability of the affordability of the system and the efficiency, of course, of the system. And then talking to issues around the environment, regulating greenhouse gas emissions and the other related externalities, and develop a sector-wide model for increase of investment into the transport system. And in terms of the MTSF, Chair, this year in and year out, we'll repeat them. I'm going to move very quickly. But we are involved onto the achievement or realization of outcomes for government, particular outcomes four, decent employment through inclusive economic growth, outcome six, an efficient and competitive and responsive economic infrastructure. Continue with the outcome six in terms of the sub outcomes, the Chairperson, but also our participation in the SIPs. We participate in SIP 1, SIP 2, SIP 3, SIP 4, SIP 7, and SIP 17. This SIP 17 was added not so long ago in terms of regional integration, in the work that we do with our regional integration component. I would move quite quickly. We also then subscribe and implement outcome 7 in terms of the comprehensive rural development and land reform. And news just in is that the rural transport strategy has been approved, so recommended for approval by the cabinet committee. So I think next week around this time, or next week Wednesday afternoon, we might have an approved revised public transport strategy, I mean rural transport strategy. And then outcomes 10, issues around the environment. One of the issues that we put before a cabinet committee today still is the green transport strategy. We are hopeful then that once presented, this also will meet approval of the cabinet committee, and therefore cabinet next week. The SONA pronouncement, key among the issues that the President spoke about earlier this year, is the upgrade on the Moloto Road. We are told that in terms of the SONA, the President spoke about 4.5 billion over a period for the upgrade of the road there. Currently, what is guaranteed is 3.7 billion of that amount. And as the Minister has indicated, work in this space has started on the Limpopo and the Mpumalanga sites. The two contractors on the from the two provinces' side have been appointed. In Mpumalanga, we are dealing with the major intersections now, and then we'll deal with the roads later in Limpopo, basically the stretch of the road from that side, from Apollo Hall up to Jenfes Muteti area, just at the border with the Mpumalanga. And then we also found some convergence with Gauteng on the Gauteng side of the road in terms of how we were going to proceed dealing with it. On the rail side, PRASA has signed a memorandum of understanding with the company in China, CSIS, to cooperate on the Moloto Rail Development Corridor. We are finalizing in terms of reference of the different committees, notably the technical committee. We have shared information in terms of documentation. Once we find an agreement, then all of these things will therefore be implemented based on our country's laws. The bus contract, the PATCO bus contract analysis was completed, is completed, and then we are going to do designs and issue contracts of tender in relation to that contract. Hopefully, this is an area where we will be able to break that huge contract of 660 buses into manageable volume in terms of vehicles and capacity, just so that we are able to include participation by small and medium-sized bus companies. And then we also report to government in terms of the non-fund plan of government with the transport infrastructure being transversal to the 9 points for government. We in these instances, we then have reported in terms of the port strategy that was published, the mineral directives issued, but the other issues are basically driven through Transnet. Action being the endorsement of the reform of the port tariff structure. We have got submitted the program, our PRASA Rail Modernization Program, and we're reporting on how far we have done. The last time we spoke to the committee, there was an issue around Danota and the Israel chair. Danota park property or building is pretty much complete as we speak. I think if the last time the committee visited there was nothing, today there is something on the ground. The structure is complete. And then we then have 13 sensors that have been delivered. We are busy testing some of these sets on the Mamelodi line. We had hoped and we are still hoping and we are working very hard to ensure that we could be able to launch the first train sets on the Mamelodi line somewhere around the 9th of May. We Pastor will expand on this in their presentation. These are the trends, the full trends. These are not the locals that we always talk about when we come to Parliament. But these are the different sites in terms of the rolling stock, not locomotives. And then there's an issue around engineers, but there's a collaboration with Transnet again. IPTNs, Chair, we have close to 1,000 buses now that have been procured over the years. We are carrying close to 150,000 passengers. And then we hope that George will be able to launch the remaining phases. Tsani was supposed to launch the Rainbow Junction line along the Paul Kruger Road into the CBD. They are doing the final testing. We've had a soft launch in Ekurhuleni recently, and then we are also proceeding with the construction in the other areas. We agree with the Minister, Chair, Honorable Chair, with regard to what is happening in the majority of the cities. We had a meeting with all the cities, represented at a higher level, where we discussed our discomfort about the pace in terms of the rollout of this system. I think there is a little bit of deceleration. We wanted to find out why. Later in the year, we'll have a roundtable on IRPT and BRTs to try and unlock the blockages, but also assist municipalities that could be struggling. You know, smaller municipalities are struggling. Well, so far, we have spent, or we have invested at close to 28 billion rand. And then the investment on the ground needs to reflect that kind of investment. And then onto the PRMG, this is where I think our monitoring in terms of what is happening in there is slightly better. I've spoken about them a lot in terms of the what needs to be to be done on the roadside in particular. We can also mention that maintenance on that piece of road continues to happen under the supervision, direction, and management of SANRAL already. So while we are waiting for the sort of reconstruction of the road, we are doing some minor changes when we do maintenance. The Harrisburg Logistics Hub, earlier on we spoke about it in terms of it being on to the, not only the APP or Strathpen, but it's also on the Minister's delivery agreement. This is the work that needs to be aligned with the recently completed feasibility from the province that talked to other economic imperatives in the province. And that talks to the DBS pass to some extent, because it also talks to the loop around the Harrismith, which also in terms of the new feasibility study, there needs to be a realignment. SANRAL and the N3 consortium are working on the evaluation of the alignment. Work continues on the Operation Pagisa, the key tasks, two of which was marine manufacturing, as well as the development of the maritime transport policy, as well as the cabotage policy, are our responsibility. With regards to the maritime transport policy, is one of those policies again that is before Cabinet Committee for final approval by Cabinet. Once approved, this will be the policy of the country in relation to maritime policy, and therein will be a chapter on cabotage policy. Chairperson, earlier on talked about the file this week, because in terms of the AG findings, as well as the on the 2015-16 annual report as well as the action plan. We have provided a document entitled Annexure 1, Audit Findings Action Plan, which is what we've been promising that we have and will provide to the committee. It is this an Excel spreadsheet with some color coding with regard to progress. Chair, in that year we had 15 findings from the AG. I think they were reduced from around 50 something in the other previous year. So we had 15 key findings. We've resolved all of them except the e-notice issue. So 14 out of 15 issues that were raised by the AG have been resolved. We can safely report 80% progress on the e-notice issue. In that, apart from us still trying to argue the issue of compliance with the modified cash standards and auditing practices, we are working very hard, as the minister indicated, that we have now officially taken over and given the system to RTMC. We are finalizing the accounting part thereof, meaning that we will soon complete the Section 42, PFMA Section 42 transfer of the assets to ENATIS. We are very, very optimistic that will be done before we submit the financials on March 31. And then the next slide, pretty much the same. The DOT responses on the 2016 BRRR recommendations. Now, the remainder of that file talks to 11 annexures that are all reports on the recommendations of the committee from that document. We need to just apologize up front, Chair, because some of these things we had some 30 days after the completion of the document and so on. So we just need to up front apologize for not having responded on time, but we were collecting information. If you look at the supplied responses, there was a need for evidential proof, it has been provided. I would want to come to it later on, but continue with the strat plan issues. The vision and the mission remain unchanged. Chair, we have not changed them in terms of the review of the strat plan. The values also remain unchanged. Issues of fairness and equity, quality and affordable transport, innovation, transparency, accountability, monitoring, and then the sustainability and affordability and accessibility. The strategic goals also remain unchanged. Ours is that of oriented outcomes goals, strategic oriented outcome goals. It talks to the issue of efficient and integrated infrastructure network, transport sector that is safe and secure, improved access for rural transport in particular, and mobility, improved services in terms of public transport, and then job creation, and then environmental protection. The programs have not changed from 1 to 7. Yes, program 5 and 6 still remain my civil aviation and maritime respectively. And this is the information that I wanted to spend some time on, but I'll also try to move quite quickly. These are all the targets. The strat plan has not changed. The strat plan has been revised. These are all the targets that talk to the issues that we either no longer pursue or the issues that we might have been added. And they are all reflected on page 122 of the strat plan document. The gender empowerment policy has been approved. So it is removed in terms of us developing and having an approved gender policy. It is not worth pursuing because it is now there and approved. The integrated communication marketing strategy is also achieved. The issue of the vacancy rate, a 10% reduction, which was a pronouncement from cabinet, has been taken out. Not that we are not filling positions, but the fact that the 10% annual increase is not supported by the budget allocation that we get from the National Treasury. We can mention, Chair, that we received them for 2017-18, 10 million, 18-19, 11.1 million, and then 19-20, 13 million additional, which is the discussion we've been holding with the committee last year to indicate that we are in discussions with the National Treasury. So those discussions have borne fruit in that we have been given a lifeline. We are in a position where at least 14 of the key and 15 of the key critical positions in the department at the level GDG and Chief Director and one or two directors are now fully funded. International relations strategy has been achieved, hence it is also that removed. The internet system, basically the intranet system, has been removed because it has been an internet system. It has been improved and upgraded. What needs to happen is from time to time uploading of the information and displaying it onto the system. The enterprise architecture, that's the intranet part thereof, has also been finalized, including that the program management dashboard. Part of this is what we promised the committee, that our projects are now being put and populated onto the dashboard for easy management and reference. The transport infrastructure funding framework has been submitted, thus finalized, and as it appears on the APP. I think there's a duplication there. The Harrisburg hub, for the reasons I have mentioned, until we get that finality on the direction with of cooperation going forward between ourselves and the three states, we will definitely put that and park it and allow the discussions to continue. And then the PSP, Private Sector Participation Framework, Cabinet pronounced that we shall have a government-wide PSP that will be led by the National Treasury. The transport section of that work has been finalized and sent to National Treasury for incorporation into the PSP. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the PSP government-wide one has also been considered and approved by the cabinet. Now the ARTO amendment bill, Chairperson, I think going forward we instead monitor the implementation of ARTO. We have removed that target specifically because ARTO has been considered by cabinet. Consequentially, we cannot implement a bill that has not yet been approved. And so is the RAPS bill, which has just gone through and approved by cabinet. I'm sure, Chair, if you have not already received the bill in bill format as approved by cabinet in terms of RAPS, it is imminent. You will get it because the letter signed by the minister has just gone through to the speaker, attaching that piece of legislation. And then the issue of vehicle testing centers, it has been modified to talk to an anti-fraud and corruption strategy for vehicle licenses other than accepting and populating statistics that do not talk much in terms of how we proceed when we find instances of fraud and corruption in those DLTCs. And so is this DLTC issues around inspection. those will then be incorporated on strategies on how we want to cap areas in those fields. The active dangerous goods operations, exactly the same matter because they talk to the same thing. Again, there was an issue of the implementation of the civil aviation policy. It has been approved by cabinet, and so is the NADP, the National Airport Development Plan. This is a plan that documents and includes and lists all the airports in the countries and categorizes them in terms of international, national, and local and municipal airfields and also aerodromes in private properties. The buffers issues in line with the YD, we removed it, not that we're not doing it, but it is because we always put six as a minimum and we do much, much more per year on this issue. But I want to believe that it's a normal business processing issue. And then corrective actions for audit findings, we reporting to them separately, like we are saying. Upgrading of Mthatha Airport, this has been done. So there's nothing to monitor going forward. Program 5 again, the Chapter 2 aircraft, in terms of the strategy of how we want to deal in the phasing out of those aircraft. That work has happened and has been done. The National Aviation Transformation Strategy, this is an addition. I've been talking to the issues that we have removed, but as part of our improvement in the aviation space, we have added a new indicator. It does not change the broader strategic objective of realizing aviation safety. But there, as a new target and indicator, this is what has been included on Program 5. Program 6, the cabotage policy, has now been included in terms of included into the maritime policy. Cabotage strategy and the cabotage bill will follow after the maritime policy has been approved. And then the issues around mock findings, they happen just before IMO findings, not thereafter, and then the maritime charter has been finalized and submitted to Parliament, Cabinet, and then Parliament. So, if you can see, Chairperson, these are the things that we have already achieved, and then they continue to be on our APPs in the subsequent years. And there's then cause for them to be removed. Rural transport strategy, as we are speaking today, have just indicated that it has been approved. And the National Land Transport Policy also. The NLTA Amendment Bill is before Cabinet. The target for the subsequent years was monitoring the implement. We are awaiting the parliamentary process so we can improve, so we can include the implementation after approval. The TAT Amendment Bill, we are proposing a new indicator from public transport in that we would want to bring an amendment bill to talk to the lessons learned on this in the implementation of this act, the principal act, and also then dealing with the new development. APP targets for 2017-18. Total number of performance targets 37, reduced from 152, mainly because of those reasons that were indicated there. You have still have ITP with 7, and then you have the lowest Bay Maritime with 4. But basically, in terms of say areas like maritime, is that policies, legislation, and other related issues would have been done in the majority in those in the with the 2016-17 APP. So I would want to safely say that those are the businesses, and then they could be and they will be able to be achieved going forward. Chair, Now, in terms of the programs themselves, I will not talk so much to the quarterly targets, but I will just indicate what we are going to do in 17-18. On the status report on the transport sector socioeconomic empowerment programs for GDYC, a status report shall be produced or developed, shall be developed in 2017-18. We will have 9 community outreach campaigns talking to GDYC issues, that is gender, disability, youth and children. We will develop a framework, an HRD framework, that will talk to how we are going to deal with matters of capacity based on the skills audit that we've just finalized, by the way, Chairperson. And then issues around compliance with compliance and internal controls, those are the things that we'll continue to monitor. And then the risk register of the department, or how we implemented the risk management strategy of the department, that will be an issue that will also occupy our minds in 2017-15. Earlier on, the AG indicated so-called 10 priority projects that will be monitored in terms of the net map, and indicated that we have found convergence in terms of which of those 10 in the technical indicators, being a document that we then develop to monitor our proof of evidence. We will finalize the white paper on the transport policy. I must indicate it was one of those that was supposed to go to cabinet, but we are working on the cleaning up the document and making sure that it talks to the broader transport mandate. And then the road freight strategy, which is also to be considered by cabinet next year, we'll do an implementation plan thereof. And then we'll develop, we said last time that we will have the map, the draft, the regional transport market access strategy. We'll do the final one in the next year. STAR is pretty much the project of the department, and we hope to bring the bill to the parliament in the next year, having had it approved, submitted to cabinet and approved by cabinet. And then we also will develop or submit the road tariff determination framework. This is a determination framework that will guide us when we deal with the matters of the road pricing and the latest issues. Chair, this one is, I think, before cabinet as we speak. And then we hope to implement it in the next year. The rail policy will be submitted to cabinet in the next year, as well as the bill, which will then go to, once the policy is finalized, the bill will then be submitted through clusters in the next year. So running a parallel process. And then develop a migration plan from the from the IRER to STAR, the interim rail economic regulator, to the single transport economic regulator. And then the PSP framework that I've spoken about, talking to branch lines in particular, we want to have an understanding of the of how we cooperate with DPE going forward, and the rail safety bill. Then, we also are finalizing the white paper on the roads policy. That should be submitted and approved in the next financial year. And then the other issue that we will do is the continued monitoring of the PRFG expenditure by provinces. And then in terms of the access road development plan, we'll pretty much consult on the draft that we have now in the next financial year. We have got this draft bill for funding legislation of road entities. Earlier on, the AG said that what is this, which entities are those? The road entities are all road-based entities in the department. And this is the mechanism that probably you see how we could find areas that we could be able to merge, consolidate, or integrate in relation to the RTMC, RTIA, and CBRTA in particular, but where possible, also interrogate the funding legislation of RAF. Those are our road entities. And then the National Road Safety Strategy has been submitted to Cabinet, so we'll definitely be talking to the issues of implementation. Anti-fraud and corruption strategy for DSCs and VTCs. This is what I spoke to about earlier, that we've consolidated this work. Earlier on we said inspection, collecting data and so on. Here we are developing a strategy to deal with corruption and fraud in the DLCCs. And then program five, we will have the draft regulation for the Airport Company Amendment Act. This is the act that we hope that Parliament will approve this financial year. That one, as well as the ATMS Amendment Act. And then we will have also SLCs and licensing amendment being submitted to Cabinet to talk to issues around amendment in that space. And then the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. I think here also we are in France, sorry, sir. We are a little bit ahead of time in terms of submission of this bill to Cabinet. We will certainly even submit it quite soon to Parliament. The National Aviation Transformation Strategy is in draft form, and we hope to finalize it in the next financial, in this financial year, 2017-18. Comprehensive maritime transport policy will definitely deal with the issues of implementing it. And the progress audit on Operation Pakisa, auditing the progress on Operation Pakisa infrastructure projects at 7 commercial ports. We will regularly report about progress we're making in that area. We also are overhauling the Merchant Shipping Act of 1951. That's a very old act. So we are overhauling it to ensure that we have a new Merchant Shipping to take into consideration new developments, but IMO conversions and treaties and recent developments in the work that we're doing in the Operation Pakisa strategy. We will be hosting as a country the 2020 World Maritime Day, the parallel event, and then we will constantly implement the project plan. Develop a project plan that should be approved by Cabinet and continue monitoring our work related to that space. We have Cabinet approval to work on the preparations for this event in 2020. IPTNs, we continue to, in the district municipalities, we continue to target 2 municipalities at a time and assist them with the developments of the integrated public transport networks. if our district municipalities in the rural areas specific to the rural needs, we'll do a comprehensive one for Bujanala. We've started with the prelim one and the OR Tambo. We'll then do comprehensive one going forward. Chair, we will implement the review of the tax recapitalization program. We have, by the way, part of the BRRR recommendations submitted a review report, Chairperson, in the file, in terms of the TRP, which we were requested. And then we will develop a framework for the implementation of the turnaround plan, Chairperson. This is where we are going to look at issues around funding, mobilizing, funding, consolidating the what we call fragmented funding sources and funding streams, and see if we cannot have enough at least to intervene and transform the industry. As you would know, there are still monopolies in those in the bus industry in particular. But here we are starting to rope in taxi services, but also small bus operators. I think there is something wrong there in terms of the machine shipping and the airport, because they can never be in public transport. So the next one is the BRT is in the 13 cities. We will continue to monitor and report on the work and the progress on the lines of Rea via MyCT, Bongoletu, Letola Polokwane, Harambe, etc., etc. We over and above this, the concerns, like I said earlier, already by the minister, later in the year we will have a round table to discuss the challenges faced by our BRT systems in the country in particular. As we have said, the new target in public transport is to amend the TAT Act to talk to the issues that are developing. Key areas, funding remains a challenge, Chairperson. And I've just mentioned the issue of consolidating the current funding streams, but also identifying new ones. And talking to National Treasury in terms of how we can be assisted to deal with underinvestment in general within the transport space. And then the other issue in terms of challenges, Chair. I've just spoken about RPTs and BRTs and PRNGs and everything else that we do in other spheres of government. We depend entirely on the capacities and related issues in those municipalities, but the dynamics also hamper how we would like to see seamless delivery of those kind of programs in those municipalities. But we would probably want to have a more coordinated IDR framework using the existing legislation, but also the issue of capacity. We are talking to institutions, universities, and TVET colleges to just come and make an intervention in the transport space. What we have found out in terms of the skills audit of the department is that there is a lack of the appropriate skills. And if you extrapolate that throughout the sector, and into the municipalities, becoming even more worse as you go further into municipalities. The other issue is based on this IGR framework, you can, the framework, not the framework act, but you can also then tighten oversight in terms of municipalities. Although we wouldn't want to call it oversight over municipalities, but it's oversight over the assistance that we are providing, more especially the beneficiaries of the grants that we are providing. Key risks, lack of capacity, I'm talking about it, interdependency in terms of other spheres, road fatalities become always a concern in terms of how we want to achieve this. I must indicate we have just finalized the risk register, clean it up. It is serving before the audit committee on the fourth day after tomorrow. And these are the things that we are tracing to in terms of the keys that have been identified. This is also the list that is used by the Lines of the Office of the AG when they come to look into the areas that they need to focus on in terms of how we are dealing with. The updating of outdated legislation also takes time. And then stakeholder cooperation. This is the area that we spoke about earlier on, that you can list 1,000, only 900 camps and fishes, then it would mean you have not necessarily achieved. Reduction in the number of vehicles that need to be scrapped in terms of safety on the roads, in particular for minibus taxi type transport. And then the issues of the reasons why this risk become a risk is because of the expenses, new vehicles and related issues. But we are hoping that the review report that we want to implement would help us to deal with those challenges. Capacity within municipalities to implement our programs more than the IRPTNs. We still have the ramps and related issues. Inadequate funding for public transport in particular, but transport in general continue to be a risk in itself. Identified budgetary constraints in terms of the template. For obvious reasons, budgetary constraints would always mean that you would not achieve what you wanted to achieve in terms of performance if we continue to experience budget cuts. But the most areas where the cuts are felt is where you are unable to fill the vacant position to an extent that you would have wanted to, but also the place that you would have wanted to, because related to this is then the issue of how you then perform in terms of the performance information or the targets that you have, which you have set yourself to achieve. And then, like I indicated, budget cuts have now stopped the momentum in terms of how we had wanted to fill the vacant positions. We soldier on, bit by bit, we fill here and there, but not in the manner that we would have wanted to. I think this last bullet was just trying to indicate that in terms of the other requirement from the committee, in terms of revenue generation, we don't directly generate revenue, but entities do, Chairperson. I would give this to Mr. Lizard to quickly go through the financials. It's just talking to the budget in the last 4 or 5 slides. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is to present on the budget. The current trajectory of what is happening in the economy has an impact. We are fortunate as a department to always at least get an amount that keeps us going in terms of the amount that we get allocated. We 10 years ago, we were sitting at 20 billion, and you can see that in the outline here, we would be sitting at 68 billion, telling us that at least there has been considered effort from the state to invest in the sector. In line with how the committee wanted to deal with the issues of the public entities and their financial performance, you would see that we put here a slide that indicates the liquidity of public entities as of the third quarter. You will see the biggest problem that we have in this case is RAF, with a solvency ratio of 0.06 and a current ratio of 0.19, which means that out of all the entities that we have, RAF is the one that is having financial difficulties more than the others. You would see in this case as well, the RTA, you see that sometimes got the same challenges. then followed by Brazza, with a ratio of about 1.01, which is a clear indication of failing against the wind. So the others are quite fairly okay when it comes to issues of solvency. The current ratio as well, you would see that RSR, for instance, at 2.54, you would see CBRG is still the same, SAMHSA is the same, and you would see that RAF is the one that is worse off. So that is just an indication of where we are from the public entities. And the next one is the budget pressure that we have. Much more compensation of employees. You see there that we need about 43 million there. Much more, 32 million coming out of salaries and 11 coming out of job evaluation. For goods and services, we need to go for the National Outbound Travel Survey of 2018. We need about 56 million for that, which we would have to get from our own resources because we don't have that amount. Transfer subsidies, you see, the road agency, 15 million, a billion, so short for. Prasa, 17 billion, short for. You would see SADC Aviation Safety Organization is a small amount that we can get from others, about 6 million. And you see MRCC, 16 million. And, of course, the biggest challenge we have on the public transport operations grant, which we call bus subsidy, which continues to be a problem for us. So we need about 33 billion shortfall that we have that is across until 1920. The next one is operational services. The split of that additional funding request, you would see that most of it comes from PRASA. There is a current subsidy allocation before reduction, and Metro Rail is about 4 billion. You see that mainland passenger service is about 495 million. And you see that operational subsidy submission it was about 5.6 billion, which gave us an additional operational subsidy request of 1.6. So total of it is about 5.8 for Prasa side. Prasa operational services, this to a certain extent is correct, but you see the current operational challenge come with target market being poor, create a problem of increases. But as the minister has already alluded to, the issue of the performance when it comes to on-time performance and all those things need to be improved as we move forward. Sandra, budget needs versus allocation. You would see there that they've got about 18 billion requirement to sustain and threaten. The current allocation is 13, the requirement is 32. So you see that to sustain and the expansion of our capacity to sustain is about 6 billion, and the capacity expansion is about 11 billion. Over the period, it goes to about 15, 14, and 13. So if you add that, you'll see that the requirement is quite high for what we have now. This will result in the collapse that we are seeing on our roads of potholes everywhere. People are asking where the problem is going to come from. It's going to come from this capacity expansion issue. Public transport operating grants is the bus subsidy. You see that the additional requirements of about 700 million is required. The funds that are collocated are about 250 million. The shortfall is 450, it increases to 600 in 1819, and it's 844 in the 1920 year. We keep on complaining about this. We will do something about it when we go into the PTOG. As we say, the current is not sufficient. We won't be able to replace this old contract. Since 2005, no new service was introduced. And the intervention is that there's a transformation plan to ensure that at least you must be in line with that. But it continues to be a big challenge for us. We are developing currently the subsidy policy as well to help us deal with this. The last time we tried to do this, we just took the money. We made provinces responsible for it instead of national. We just shifted the problem to the state. Now we give the budget summary in terms of programs. You would see that from 13-14 we're at 43 billion. We are growing to about 19-20 at about 68 billion. As I said, that we have been quite fortunate. Others have seen big cuts in their budgets. Ours has been growing steadily. In this financial year 2018, the allocation is 69.8 billion rand, growing to 64 in the next year and 68 in the coming year. As we say, we need to make sure that we cut to fit what we have, as we know that we are coming into areas of fiscal consolidation as we move forward into the LTE. By economic classification, you see that our transfer and payments are one of our biggest, about 98.1%, which is now sitting at about 58.6 billion, and the payment of capital is about 4 million, and you see that goods and services is 660, and our compensation of employees is at around 450 million, which is an increase from the previous revised estimate of 432. Just on compensation of employees, as a final slide, you see what we meant by the money that has been allocated. There is 11 million at the end there that has been additional, that has been coming, 12 million in the coming year, 13 million, and that's all we can grow our compensation of employees with. So this will determine how many posts can be filled as we move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable members, I think it will be fair and proper for us to welcome the Honorable Mulaudzi, Advocate Mulaudzi, indicated that he probably he will have to start in the profession first before practicum. We were just receiving the APP express plan from the department, we will. I'm opening up honourable members for discussions and debate for the next 30 to 45 minutes. Honourable members, there you go. I'll start here on my right, and then it goes like that.
Thank you, Jay. Since we didn't have the opportunity to ask our new minister any questions, I'm not going to misuse this opportunity, but certainly his presence justifies me to say thank you for his presence. I think he's been longer in this committee today than what we ever saw any predecessor minister. So thank you for that. And it surely is encouraging and motivating. And thank you also for the acknowledgement which we so dearly needed as a committee, which you might have also experienced as a previous member of this committee. So I do have concerns about your assumption, however, Minister, in the trend that you expressed as with the trains that have been vandalized due to the unreliability. I do have a concern about that particular assumption, but it's still early days and we can only wish you well going forward. Chair, I would like to just focus on one particular aspect in terms of a question at this stage around the Mulatto project. And this question is of particular concern since we've been engaged with questions around issues around the Attorney General, where the Attorney General or the AG specifically said that the department in an arguable letter, bigger extent, falls short of giving reasons for particular amendments and actions. Now, with the Mulatto Rail, or the Mulatto Road Project, we'll get to the Mulatto Rail, but with the Mulatto Road Project, this is in a particular concern because this demonstrates over time the AG's remark. Because originally, the Mulatto Road Project was budgeted for as 1.1 billion rand. Then last year, in June 2016, when our previous minister launched the Mulatto Road Project, she announced that the total budget is 3.7 billion rand. However, at SONA, it was mentioned as 4.5 billion rand. And your budget then reflects 4.8 billion rand. Now, definitely there are reasons for this, but can't we then rebudget this, project the term of construction, and rather work on an exact figure or a predetermined figure rather than to create this continuous impression that, you know, we don't know what's going on, because I don't believe this is how the department works. But certainly it does not reflect the same motivation that I might have for the work that the department does. Because we can't fall around having these different numbers. Furthermore, it has a compliance concern. It has an implication in terms of the auditing profile which the department has. And then there's a further concern in terms of where would the money come from, you know, if we continuously move these numbers around. So the questions will arise around what is the actual amount. Are we as a department then, do we have assurance about particular budget amounts? How would this then go forward in terms of planning, and surely, you know, it's a credibility issue then in the bigger scheme of things around planning and budgeting and management. Chair, I'm not sure, is it also possible to ask questions around the 2016-17 financial statements?
No, thank you very much, Chair. And also just follow my colleagues and thank the Minister for being here. I think it's leadership that is important. Now, Chair, let me just start off by saying I'm quite happy with a lot of progress that has been reported by the SDG, number of achievements and so on. So I'm just going to focus on the things that worries me. So now, and I've got a list of them. I'll just rattle through them quickly. I have the, and I'll combine some. The one part which I think the CEO has ended with is the issue about the compensation of employees. The former group C, acting group CEO, and the current CFO of the Department of Transport. Am I saying it right?
Yeah.
So
the last parting shot from him is that what you see in the light slide is what is going to determine a vacancy, feeling of vacancy. Because you don't have that, so it's going to determine whether you will fill vacancies. I'm not sure, maybe you will clarify it, whether that has a direct implication with what the acting DG was saying. They have made a breakthrough with the DDGs. The appointment with the treasurer that they have a write-off in the DDGs. So I'm not sure whether that statement has any bearing to the positions of the DDGs. So if you could explain that, because I think that Department of Function will be say that the positions of the DDG and acting is absolutely critical. So then the second thing that I just wanted to raise, Chair, is the whole area that deals with municipality, public transport, DRT, the whole spectrum of activities. Now, I think the DG, the SDG did give us a report about how far they are so far. But having gone through it, there are a whole lot of gaps that particularly require some attention. It is not clear the department's capacity to hold the hands of the municipality with respect to the DRT, the implementation part of it. And I know that we did not make available the consultant that are dealing with that aspect because it's a municipal function. But it remains a concerning that particular aspect is not necessarily receiving attention. And I think that the whole thing about Department of Transport being a transparent agency has got all the rights to make sure that those who are dealing with that aspect are appropriately skilled to do so, and is not necessarily a monopoly of space. My little information is that you do have a monopoly of space in terms of capacity. Few consultants that are running this whole consultancy around the DRT, and it's a bottlenecking in terms of the rollout of various municipalities because they shuttle between places to give the advices on various municipalities. So that's a bottlenecking. I don't know the department own hands capacity in terms of making sure that happens. And linked to that, Chair, is this whole thing about 13 cities. In the plan going forward, the focus is 7 cities, if I'm counting correctly. The quarter one is 7 municipalities, this. Now the 13 municipalities, or the 6 remaining, are not necessarily mentioned in this particular financial year, or the new financial year. I don't know what's going to happen with that, because the money is being budgeted, money has been allocated to the, not only over 1 year, but over a couple of years. So, it brings me to the suggestion, Chair. I think that as this committee, we need to have all-in meeting of the state and city high-level people that deal with transport, together with the Department of Transport. I think let's have a face-to-face discussion with it. Because I think that continuing to put the money into this, and we don't quite understand, it goes to this debate that we have with Treasurer, with AG earlier on. I think we need to find the space to have all in discussion, to find that directly from there. What is it that is hampering the progress in terms of the rollout of this? I know that they meet now and then with the department, but I think in terms of money aspect, I would want to suggest that we have that face-to-face discussion with them. And also understand what will happen with the 7 other cities that are not necessarily going through. Is it a matter of a capacity that is hampering in terms of that particular aspect? Then the whole thing that deals with is still on transport is this bus issue. The PATCO, I noted the PATCO contract that is now coming up. But for me, the problem that remains is the CADA. And I think the CFO speaks about we are now going to develop a subsidy policy. And you know what the problem is? The problem is that you continue to have a problem of skills issue around public transport, particularly when you deal with taxis, the whole taxi review program and the buses, is a continuation of perpetual old system of providing a subsidy to buses, those that buses that you've inherited from 1994. I'm not sure, because I'm not hearing the turnaround, whether the turnaround, the last time the acting DG spoke about having this conversation, where we're going to be able to see when this is going to be effective. I mean, why must, speaking in the Western Cape, why must Golden Arrow continue to be the only preferred service provider? What is God-given right that they must only be the one? You have the small buses in Cape Town who are in the association, but they are completely out, elbow out there, unable to get in. Taxis are unable to get in. City, my city is coming in, also crowding out the small bus taxi operators in it because they're buying back the road. So actually what you're looking at, killing off this little industry while you perpetuate the old system of those. And I'm talking about Cape Town, I mean, you can speak to Star, you can speak to any other bus operators that you have inherited. Now the question is, how radical are we going to be in changing the situation around here? And I'm saying this, and I'm looking at you, Minister, here. My eyes is at you, because this issue is it's a leadership issue around putting the foot down. I mean, Golden Arrow is close to what, 800 million per year in the Western Cape. Others are more. Why can't we intervene around this? We said before, why can't we get an envelope of a feeder system transport that provides that these other small ones are also beginning to get in the very cake of this? Why can't we have an integrated ticket system? And I'm sorry that I'm taking long, but I'm just trying to make this point so that we understand it. The issue is here. This is a black business, small business, the taxi industry, which for it to stand on its feet would require to lean on the shoulder of the authority, particularly around the space of the issue about the buses. So I'm saying that I don't see we're going to get to the next election while we're talking about non-subsidy of taxi industry. We said to them that it is coming. Now it's 22 years down the line, it's still coming. I'm worried that the policy is going to be the barrier. And I don't know, maybe you will help us understand this. Let me end up with this chair. The target and the program implementation, the years, the number of slides where you were talking 2019, certain things that will only be, now I don't know the reason for 2019. It has not been explained except to be put into a grid of a year. Is it a link to capacity and budget? I'm speaking here as a person who must go and also contest the election. 2019 is the year of the election. Why must you have this thing that you're going to bottleneck 2019 with some of the critical decisions that you must make when you're also staring the election in the face? So that's really for me, and I know that it's late in the day in terms of it, and you're but I think some intervention around the program is required. I do have others, but I think I'm going to leave here now. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Robert. The other issue, probably, that was related to that, I also take note in relation to the white paper. Why is it kept on being shifted? Because if I remember correctly, the white paper was supposed to be taken up to 2018. Now it's 2020. And I can't understand what's the reason behind. But the other issue, Minister, so I was driving to another place there in